Okay, guys, we're going to get started. Here we are on our 10th class. Can you believe it's been 10 weeks? I can't. So we have two more classes. We have one class at our regularly scheduled time next Thursday, and then I'm not quite sure when the last class will be. I have to schedule it, and I will let you know. I won't be able to do it the Thursday after Christmas, because I'm traveling. So I'm not sure when it will be, but I will let you know as soon as I figure it out. So in this class, we've just been on such a tour of, the realms. We did spend a lot of time in the lower realm doing shaman stuff and shaman journeys and working with power animals. We did three classes in the upper realm, in the middle realm, working with ghosts, dead people, shadow spirits, human stuff. It was really, really fun and cool and interesting. And then today we're going to do a class in the upper, about the upper realms. What is this, upper realm all about? And then I know I want to finish with some information on working with clients. So we've been all around these different realms and gotten a lot of different guides and things like that. So the next couple of classes, we're going to talk about how do you do client work? How do you do sessions? And I'm going to give you some homework on going out and beginning to do readings for people. In fact, I'm going to give you that homework right now. So between now and next week or the end of class, I want you to try and get together with each other. You can arrange it with each other on Facebook. You can talk, do phone sessions for each other. If you live close, you can get together. And it doesn't have to be with one of the classmates. It can be with anybody that you know, and begin to do some mini readings for people. And it's good if you want to start practicing that. It's okay if you want to wait until the next class, where I'm going to give you actually a little format to follow, so you know you have a format to work with. And then you're going to practice that and report back. So that's where we're going next. In today's class, like I said, we're going to cover the upper realms, and I had my little map of the cosmos, which Christine, for you coming into class, it's actually available as a document on the Facebook page. So I'll make sure that I add you to the Facebook page if you're not already on there. It was sent to you, and it's available on the website that has all the other downloads and documents and everything. So that's what I'm talking about, and it's a map of the realm. So we're up there in the upper worlds now. That's just like if you think about the Earth as being kind of, in this middle of the map, in this dimension, then what's above that, we have the astral plane, which is the level that's exactly above the Earth, and there's all kinds of other planes, the causal plane, the etheric plane. There's just, as far as I can tell, there's an infinite number of these dimensions or worlds that are like layers on a cake, right, that exist above our planet. And we're going to only talk about a few of them. Today we're going to talk about the angelic realm. So here we're going to have our class about angels. And so pure energy beings, other dimensional beings, star beings, and other galactic cosmic level guides. So truthfully, we could do a whole class on each of those topics, because they are, important and infinite. But I'm going to give you enough information in this class right now, and we're going to really focus mostly on the angels to give you guys some connections and contacts, spiritual contacts and guides that you're pulling from the upper realm. And there are some of you, many of you, who really will find that this is your place. This is the place where most of your spirit guides come, hail from this upper world, the upper dimension, or the upper realm. So let's talk a little bit about the astral plane. We spoken a little bit about it already when we talked about ghosts and shadow spirits. But it's the one right above us, and I guess maybe the best analogy that I can use for you on the astral plane is like there's the planet Earth, and then all around the planet Earth is the atmosphere, right? And just above the atmosphere is like, think about where the satellites orbit, So it's kind of that, literally on that level, and that far away from our planet, And the ghosts, we talked about it when we talked about people that were dying, because spirits of the dead have to lift up through this dimension in order to get back to soul world, and it's kind of gray and foggy, and just sort of like that outer, you know, realm of space that orbits around the Earth, it's kind of full of space junk, you know, like the space junk is like our atmosphere, not just above our atmosphere, our out of Earth's orbit is filled with space junks and pieces of asteroids and satellites and all kinds of things. And that's what this realm is like. It's got some stuck dead people, some ghosts, the lower astral entities we talked about. And it's really important when you're reaching for the upper realms that you miss this one. Like you want the elevator to go above that. It's not a good neighborhood to play around in. And it's a mistake that many beginning psychics make, which is to only reach high enough to get to the astral plane and not higher. And if you don't know what you're doing, or you're using something like a Ouija board, so Ouija boards are sort of tuned in to hit the astral plane, or you just really have a low vibration yourself and you're trying to do psychic work, you're not going to lift your vibration high enough to speak to some of the other denizens of the upper worlds. And that's why I leave them to the end to talk about them, because it does take having sort of a higher frequency yourself to reach up and hook into the angels. They're not the easiest, beings to speak to right off the bat. So I heard a story once when I was really young. I studied, I got a lot of training out at Western Mass in Northampton and Amherst in that area. And I was working with a really, really reputable psychic, and she was an amazing person and an incredible teacher and an awesome psychic. And I heard about this group of people, that kids on my college campus, I went to UMass Amherst, you know, that were, psychics, and they had a psychic circle, and I went to hang out with them, and, it was a bad scene, and none of them knew what they were doing. Half of them were smoking pot and were like high, and of course they had a Ouija board and a planchette, and they were table tipping and stuff like that. And the room was full of these nasty, weird, gross spirits that they were calling, and they totally didn't mean to. They just didn't know better. Like, they didn't have the right training. So, this is where you go if you're, inexperienced and you don't know what you're doing. So we talked last time about how do you begin to build discernment? How do you begin to practice the art of discernment? And it's tricky with some of the lower astral entities, particularly the ones called the face changers, because they change their face. We talked about that last time. And, you know, James posted on the Facebook group this thing about, you know, funny thing about the creepiest invisible friends, you know, and a lot of them are like, yeah, you know, I'm your playmate, but go kill your family. And there's something about the lower astral beings, the face changers, that always tell you to go kill your family. So if you hear that, you know you're dealing with one of these lower astral entities. And they're not demonic, they're relatively harmless, but they're annoying, and they change their faces, so it's very hard to know what you're dealing with. So I wanted to teach you guys something really useful, and it's a command that you can use to impel or command, require that a spirit that you're dealing with reveal its true nature to you, okay? And this is how you can tell what spirits you're dealing with. I learned this one pretty early on in my psychic development. It's easy, but the tricky thing is you have to have a little bit of spiritual power in order to make it work, right? Like, you can't just say it. You have to have some sort of spiritual cojones, you know? You're going to have, like, this power to go with the command. And I want you guys to know it and try it and see. It's very useful, right? So the command is reveal. What you say is, if you see encounter a spirit that you're not quite sure about, you can command the spirit reveal itself. And you do it, you know, in this sort of formula, like in the name of Jesus Christ or Archangel Michael. You want to call on a higher power, like call on one of your guides, call on one of your master level guides or one of the archangels that works with you. I command in the name of Jesus Christ, I command you to reveal yourself. And they pretty much have to. They pretty much have to reveal their true form when you do it that way. You have to mean it. You have to feel your power. You have to feel the command come up out of your being, out of your third chakra, and you're issuing this, you know, proclamation. And I give that one to you. It's very, very useful. Good to know how to do that. It's, you know, will come in handy as we go through time, as you go through time. So James asked, is table tipping bad hocus pocus life? The answer is it depends on who's doing it. So we have some really, really charming, lovely ladies here at Solstice who do table tipping, and they are very pure of heart and well trained and, you know, good. They're great. Like, if you wanted to do table tipping work, you know, session with them, I would have no hesitation about you working with them. Table tipping is, one of those, it's sort of like, you know, you use a light table and you put your hands on it and the table moves, the spirits can use it. I have heard that a mixed bag around it. So I've seen people that, create more of a physical manifestation between the energy of the people that are around the table. So it's not really spirits. It's people that it's your own physical energy that's coming through. And it's also, one of those things that historically has been used by psychics who are charlatans, to con other people. In which case the psychic puts a wire up their sleeve, like a coat hanger, a little wire that you can't see, you know, and then they're wear all this stuff. And when you put your hands on the table, the wires go click underneath the table and so your hands rest on the table, but as you move your wrists and your shoulders, the table moves. So it has a little bit of that charlatan kind of edge, and there's been famous ghost hunters and psychic busters that have busted people for this kind of fraud, and spirit boxes too, which were very popular. Look it up. In the spiritualist movement, which is more at the beginning of the turn of the century, and the spiritualist movement was huge. There was a very strong subset of charlatans and frauds that were defrauding people of their money by putting on a show with table tipping and spirit boxes. So spirit box was this like a magician's cabinet, you know, that it was actually a magician's cabinet that you put the lights down low and you'd have like smoky fog and you'd, you know, the spirit of so-and-so would come through and magically appear in the box. And it's, of course, it's a concealed back on the box and some figure in a gray robe steps out and who knows who it's an accomplice of that. So there's just, you know, there's a lot of history and in a way the charlatans and fraudsters have the legacy that they have given psychics, legitimate psychics, really a bad name, and we kind of always have to contend with that. And even today, I often run across people that I think are fraudulent. I hear stories about them. You know, from the lady who puts a curse on you for $500 and will take the same curse off for the same amount of money, to people who really will say, you know, you've got a curse on your family, you need $10,000, so I'll remove the curse, or you've got a demon, I'll remove the entity, $10,000, don't tell your husband, because then that spell won't work. I just actually worked with a woman who fell under somebody like that and needed help extricating herself from the clutches of this other person who gave her that line, and that the other psychic had a fair amount of spiritual power actually just bent towards evil and it kind of had her grips in this lady. So there's stuff out there you're going to be careful about with that stuff. But let's go back to our topic. The reveal command, very, very useful. And I want you guys to know that and to use it whenever you feel like you're in the presence of a spirit that you're not 100% sure about, or you can, it works really 99% of the time for them to show their true form. Okay, so good to know. Cosmic guides. So, I don't know what to say about these cosmic guides. Lots and lots of people have them. Pretty much everybody has a little bit of, or many of you will have a little bit of a connection with cosmic guides. And cosmic guides come from really far away. Like, they're the not from around here kinds of spirit guides. And some people have a very strong connection to these high, they're way, 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 way up there. So they're beings from another dimension. There's, as far as I can tell, totally infinite and unique number of these. So I see these guys often on the clients that come in. That some people have a super strong connection with them. And I think of them sort of as the star beings, like they're not from around here. They're not from, so you hear when you're, you know, in sort of New Agey circles, you'll hear people talking about the Arcturians or the Pleiadians, right? You know, these are the ones that I'm talking about. They're from multidimensional beings that are far away, and they have a lot of different purposes in working with us, but generally the cosmic level guides are focused on bringing us information from outside of the Earth system, you know, from outside of, like, you know, our particular human domain here. They're, if you think again, you go back to the idea that it's an infinite universe. Well, we're just one little planet, one little dimension in an infinite universe. So these cosmic guides are from up there, and I've seen so many different kinds of them. They're hard to describe, and certain people have very strong connections with them, and they're called many different things. Some people call them, you know, extraterrestrial. So little green men, like we're going to talk about little green men now. And there's so many different theories, and this is something that I want you to really think about for yourself and come up for what you believe about aliens, interdimensional beings, as I prefer to call them, or as more I understand them a little better that way. I know that they're real, absolutely. And they exist in many different forms. I don't know, and I have a lot of big question marks around this topic, so I have more questions than I have answers for you. I know they're real and they do exist. I know that they're real in energy form, in multidimensional form. I pretty much believe that they're around in a physical form, like, you know, all the stories you hear, people that have the close encounters of the third kind, like the direct contact with these other beings. I think that they're around us in energy form, or in a dimension that's just slightly one or two ticks off from us. So I believe that they can exist simultaneously with us in a side-along dimension, and that's in a way why we don't find so many wreckages of their planes or their bodies or things like that, because they're actually coming in they're multi-dimensional beings or alternatively dimensioned beings. And I don't know, like, you know, my ex-father-in-law, so my first husband's father, was a Army airplane pilot, 30 years in the military. Lots of flying time, and I asked him once what he thought about aliens and Roswell and all that stuff, and he said to me that, and this is a very straight-laced guy, I mean, this is a guy who was in the military, and he's just kind of like an in-the-box sort of dude, and he said, absolutely, all pilots know that they're aliens, they see them all the time, they see unidentified flying objects all the time, military pilots, commercial pilots, and this is like my straight-laced Boy Scout full colonel father-in-law who's telling me this. And I asked him about, you know, why don't they come out? And he's like, well, the military is very strong, you know, rules against talking about it, and so do the commercial airlines. But within the fraternity of pilots, it's really a well-known and established, yeah, they're like, oh yeah, I saw another one of those things today. And I asked him about, you know, Roswell, and he's like, no, Roswell was just, experimental aircraft and stealth aircraft, and it served the, you know, military well to kick up the idea of aliens. So it was during the Cold War, it would get people off the idea of stealth airplanes. So there's so much, you know, conspiracy theory about, you know, aliens, or there's the gray aliens and the reptile aliens, and the gray ones are here to help us and the reptile ones are here to hurt us, and they messed with the DNA of humanity, and you know, like the conspiracy theories go so deep about, you know, the reptilians have you know, blended hybrids, and now they're like, that explains George Bush and Cheney, that I've heard this many times actually, that they're actually hybrid aliens. It sort of makes sense, I guess, in a way. I don't know. It's as good as an explanation as I've heard, but for them, for those guys, but there's a huge amount of conspiracy theories and New Age theories about the truth about aliens and what they mean and what, how they relate with us. And I don't know what to tell you about it, honestly, except think about it yourself and see what feels real and true for you. I have over the years dealt with clients who have had abduction experiences. I just believed them, you know? I've also dealt with people that have had talked about abduction experiences that turned out to be really weirdly processed physical or sexual abuse experiences. Like, it was easier for them to experience that themselves as being abducted by aliens than it was that their parent or whatever, whoever was coming in and molesting them in the middle of the night. So I just kind of, you know, I keep an open mind about it, because I guess it really, unless one actually lands in my house, you know, and shakes my hand, unless AT like shakes my hand, I kind of stay on the fence about whether or not it's real. I certainly believe something otherworldly. I certainly believe that we are, you know, one of many, many, many planets with life on it. And I don't know, you know, I talk to people that have guides. Some of my clients and some of you I know actually do have clients, guides that are sort of like Galactic Federation. You know, they're sort of actually like this group of multidimensional beings that are sort of organized in this like Galactic Federation type of organization, that have this very sort of UN feeling to them, but kind of look like the cantina scene out of Star Wars, you know, like with, you know, I've seen it over and over. So I know that it's real on an energetic level. Is it real on a physical level? Why not? God knows there's stranger things on in heaven and earth, right? So I would love to hear, post on Facebook if you have, in the Facebook group, if you have your alien stories. I want to hear about them, what you think about them, what you believe them, if you've ever seen one. You know, what's your deal with that? I'd love to know. So the other ones we're going to talk about are something that I call pure energy beings. Pure energy beings, when I was younger and less diplomatic, I used to call them energy blobs because that's what they looked like to me. Pure energy beings are non-human spirits. They're not angels. They're not necessarily these cosmic extraterrestrial dudes. But they're kind of in this other category, that I don't know quite how to categorize them, but they're made out of light. They're very pure. They're pure energy beings, or they don't have physical bodies. They're beings of pure energy. And they can look like streams of light. They can look like mandalas. They can look like they're made out of crystal, like sort of crystalline, they can look like kind of luminescent, organic looking jellyfish. They can look slightly human. They can look really weirdly alien, but mostly they're just made out of light, and they are, powerful, powerful healers and, light beings. And they're usually very dedicated either towards healing or towards the enlightenment of humanity. And a lot of times when I see them a lot, when I work with the students from the healer training school or my Reiki students, because they tend to be drawn to people that do healing work. And if you're doing healing work, energy work, in particular, you will have one of these, probably, one of these pure energy healer guides around you that, you know, when I'm doing healing work, I have a lot of the healing I do myself. Sometimes I just flow Reiki, which comes from, you know, the sort of universal source, but I've, many, many, many times, all the time, I have experiences where I feel like these pure energy beings come through me and they're like, okay, honey, just step aside and let us handle this one. And I feel like they are in me and they're working. They are doing the work. I'm just sort of holding open the door for them to work deeply. You know, they do psychic surgery. They do deep energetic DNA and template repair work on my clients. They do stuff that I just sort of sit back and hold open the door for them. So they're really interesting, and it's good to know if you have them around you. And sometimes they come in as bodyguards or companions, and I want to explain that a little bit, by saying that there are people that, and this is probably true for some of you guys, that I don't know how else to say this. It's like that don't have particularly human souls. So you're here on Earth, you're having a human experience, maybe you're having even a series of lifetimes here on Earth, but it's not your point of origin. So it's very interesting from a soul perspective to find out what your point of origin is. Where does your soul go when it's not here? Is it a human soul and it goes to human soul world? Mine isn't particularly like that. So my point of origin, Earth is not the first planet that I've incarnated on, actually. My home is somewhere else. And I know that, and I've always sort of known that. So it's good to know where your point of origin is. It's like what part of the cosmos does your soul originate out of? And I heard this term a long time ago in the 80s, sort of new age thing, the star people. So the star people are people, human beings, whose point of origin is off world. You know, and they come into Earth because they're having a few lifetimes here on planet Earth. Or they're slumming it here on planet Earth to experience the unique aspects that our dimension offers. The body, the physicality of it, the solid matter, plus the polarization of the dual nature of our planet, light and shadow, and the free will to choose. This is a very, 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 very unique experience in the cosmos. And so, beings from all over the cosmos come and do semester abroad on planet Earth to have a chance to experience the physical body, the light and the dark, the shadow and light and free will. So there are people that come here knowing they're an exchange student and they're just here for semester and then they're going back to Arcturus or the Pleiades or wherever you're from. And I see that it's not super common, but it's, you know, a percentage of people, 10% or something like that of people that I encounter. I'm like, oh, you're really not from around here, are you? And I can tell because they don't feel, they've interesting light bodies are usually, their energetic anatomy is usually slightly different from a really normal point of origin human Earth person. And also they tend to have these light beings that accompany them onto the planet. You were an exchange student and you'd bring your bodyguards and your companions from your home planet, from your home place to be with you here during this experience. And I often notice that the beings that come with are here sort of auditing the class along with their person. So one person chooses to volunteers to incarnate and have a body, and then they've got like five ride along beings from their home dimension who come to experience the world like by looking over your shoulder and supporting you also as you do that. So that's really, it's just something that you see. And I think it's cool when I see it. I'm like, oh, you're a star person. And a lot of times when I tell somebody that, it's usually a relief. They usually already know. They have an inkling that might be true, and they feel quite relieved that, there's a name and to it and a purpose for it and a thing. Star seed people, sometimes it's called that, star people. It's got all kinds of things, names to it, but it's an interesting thing. And if we had more time in the class and we were to do sort of a whole, multiple class series on the soul, the nature of the soul and the evolution of the soul, that would be a good thing to look into. What is your point of origin? In fact, you can do a guided meditation on that, pulling your soul down and checking in with it around. You can ask it. Your own soul is one of your best guides anyway. So, okay, so let's talk about angels. So angels are really interesting. They're a big, sort of the big stars of the upper realm, right? And they exist in this place called the angelic heavens, or angel world, as I call them. And I know many of you guys know this about me already. And if you've taken any of my other psychic classes, you will know this for sure about me. But I tend to have a radical view of the angels. So I don't have the same experience that most New Agey people have when they talk about angels. I just don't. I never have. So I'm going to share with you my experience and invite you to form your own opinion and your own relationship with these beings, regardless of what I tell you. So my experience is my experience, and you're going to form your own experience. But here's my deal about it. So when I was a child, I was terrified of angels. They used to come into my room, and they scared the crap out of me, like really bad. And they absolutely never looked human to me. They never do. They still never have. And I remember when I was a little bit older, reading in the Bible, you know, studied comparative religion when I was in college, and I read the Bible many times, more as a study than like a religious document. But, you know, it talks about the people falling on their knees and trembling in their presence, and that's really my experience of them. So the first one that I recall seeing when I was little was an angel called I, as in I. And he was huge, and he had this big giant eyeball, like big giant eyeball, like the size of my room. And out of this giant eyeball, there were flames and feathers. And he came in like this. He was a cherubim, I found out later. And his official was a very, very, very high level angel. They don't usually have anything to do with humanity, so I don't know why he was there. But checking me out, looking at me, and he was the eye of God is his total title, And he scared the piss out of me, like probably literally 4 years old or 5 years old. So I've just never had this, you know, like fluffy bunny, cute little puppy view of angels. I just don't get that. And I don't understand, you know, I know there's a huge, and I'm probably offending all of you guys by saying this, but I know there's a huge movement in the New Age, sort of the angel cards and, people who think, you know, think they can really pull in one of these massive guides by pulling a card. I mean, I do think that the cards connect us sometimes with angelic energies, but I don't agree and actually sort of don't approve of this idea that angels are like a dog that you can call, here, angel, 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 come on. You know, they're not like that. They're incredibly powerful, somewhat terrifying to me, and they always have an agenda. Seriously, they really do, that I'm never quite sure of what their agenda is. So for me, they show up and I'm like, oh God, oh shit. It's literally, one comes and I'm like, oh crap. What did I do now? Or what do they want me to do? Because it's always one of those. In my experience, they don't just pop by for a cup of tea and a biscuit, you know? They're intense, right? So, and again, I'm just sharing my experience. You're going to form your own experience with them. So take what I'm saying with a grain of salt, please, okay? Angels are not human and have never been human. They're non-human guides. So it's not like we die and become an angel. It's sort of one of those myths about them, right? God created angels as his first children, right? They're very ancient, much older than humanity. And that they have no free will. They're immortal. They don't particularly evolve, or if they do, they evolve very, very slowly over time. And they are the servants of God, and to do God's bidding. They're neither male nor female. They're asexual or androgynous. And in many ways, from the spiritual sense, human beings are considered superior to angels, right? So human beings have free will, and angels are the servants of God. So there are certain theories, and I'm just telling you theories. I'm really seriously, form your own opinions. I'm just giving you the theories for you to consider. So there are certain corners of the universe that truly consider humanity to be far superior in evolutionary rights than the angelic beings are. I don't know. I don't feel that way about them, but it's one of the things that's out there. So sometimes in the old, you know, gospels and the Torah and the old, you know, books like that, the religious books, they are called, especially in Aramaic and Hebrew, they're called the Elohim. Okay. And what that means, and I don't know if it's Arabic or Aramaic, it's one of those, or Hebrew, it's one of those old languages. It means servant of El. So El is the one God, right? So they have names like Michael, which is Misha, El. Misha, servant of El. Or Uriel, you know, which is Uri, servant of El. Okay. So that's sort of what their human names are like. Truly their names are, and their forms, like you can't actually see what an angel really looks like. They're too complicated and too energetically high frequency for us to wrap our heads around either what they look like or what their names are. So the closest I ever heard an angel say his name was, first of all, so loud it would have splintered my head like a pumpkin, smashed it open, and it was in like 64 part harmonics, like a Gregorian chant, with most of the frequencies being so off the scale you couldn't even hear it. So they come in and they're like this huge thing you can't see because it's so multidimensional and giant, and my name is like ma, you know, and then but we can't say that, so that's my name, but you can call me Fred, or you can call me Michael, or you can call me George, or whatever. They just sort of have these names that don't actually mean much to them. Oftentimes they'll introduce themselves as their title or their function. And that's where we get like the Angel of Mercy or the Angel of, those are a group of angels called the Virtues, but they have sometimes titular names or rank, names that sort of denote their rank or their place in the angelic hierarchy, right? So the angel's job is to keep the multiverse, the universe running. So they, when I was little, they called the universe the symphony, and they called themselves the singers, and they sing the notes of the symphony, and they do, because they're very much about vibration, and they vibrate, you know, at this particular level. And there's only a very, very, very small subset of angels that have anything to do with humans or anything to do with our planet. They're very busy, you know, out there sort of running the rest of the cosmos and making sure that you know, that things are happening in the cosmos as they should. There's just this tiny little fraction of them that are like care about what's happening on our planet. So they don't have any bodies. They don't. They're in the category of the pure energy beings, right? They're mostly made of energy. And they really don't incarnate here on planet Earth. This dimension is too dense for them to physically manifest here for longer than a very short amount of time. That would be very painful for them to appear. They could technically do it. And I think sometimes they do interfere with, you know, humanity in some ways. But, you know, you hear these stories about, you know, you're in a, you know, somebody's in a fiery car crash and some stranger comes by and with inhuman strength pulls the cars apart and drags the person out of the car and, you know, look, and then people look around and there's no one there. Okay. That happens. And it often believe that it's sort of these angels that manifest like, you know, boom like that. And they will sometimes interfere or intervene to, you know, keep our regular scheduled program running. So when I was, you know, 8 years old or 6 years old, and I jumped off the roof of my parents' garage because I thought I could fly, and what is that? I'd broken my neck. I felt something grab my ankle and slow me down, and I landed on my side. I just broke my collarbone. I landed in the compost pile. and I'm pretty sure that was an angel. And I could hear them, my guide screaming, like, do not take yourself out right now because we really need you, and you know, do you know how hard it was to get you here? Kind of like, you know, that. So they can do that, but they're much more actually likely to send an agent, to send their lots of many people, probably a bunch of you, who work as sort of agents for the angels. They're in tight with the angels. They're angel people, and you have angels all around you, and you will be a human agent for them here, and so you get this, you know, desire to get in your car and you drive randomly until you get to the scene of a fiery car crash, and then you jump out, and for some reason in that moment you have this unbelievable, you know, inhuman strength, and you pull the cars apart and you pull somebody out. This, you know, that's much more likely that that's the way that story goes. So they will frequently use much more frequently use a human agent, a human helper, to do their work here than they are to actually manifest on the planet. Technically, they can do it, but they just don't actually very often. So, to me, the angels appear like columns of light. They never look like people. I've never seen them look like people, although they do look like people for many people. I think they just sort of use that as a kind of a user interface. We can't really deal with what they actually look like. They appear to us in a form that we can accept, which would be that people, human beings with the wings and the halos or whatever, you know, however it goes. Sometimes if they're not columns of light, they'll be seen very, 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 very tall, like a beam of light that starts way up there and comes down, and they can have kind of these like swoopy, parts of them that look like wings. So I understand why people think they have wings, and they can embrace you with those wings, if you will. Sometimes I see them as orbs of light. Big ones, like beach ball size ones, not the little ones you see in photographs, which are much more likely to be human spirits. I don't know how you'll see them. Sometimes people just see them as light, and they kind of go into the energy blob category. But to me, they really often look like these columns of light. And I remember really, who came into my room, I remember seeing one when I was about that same age, maybe 5 or 6. My parents, you know, we were on it was on Route 9 in Framingham or Wellesley. There was a car accident, pretty bad one. And there were cars turned over on the road, and traffic was really slow. It stopped, you know, going by really slowly. And when we went by, it's on our side, you know, so we were driving by like one lane, and there were these, turned over cars and two people lying on the side of the road. And one person was lying, and, there was an EMT working over that person, like doing something. And above the EMT, I could see this really long, huge white column of light that seemed like it came from heaven, you know, column of light and sort of this shape, you know, and there was the person doing the work. And I knew that that person was going to live because that was an angel, and that angel was with its human agent working on that person. And then the other person that was there had the same thing, but it was this black column. It was this black column, like a tornado, like a funnel, around it. And there was no person working on that one. And I knew that person was going to die or had already died, because that's more like the angel of death, you know, or one of those death eaters that came, we talked about last time, that came through to assist the person in crossing over. And I have that picture in my mind, like a snapshot, never forgot it. Right. And that's really like how I see how my personal experience of how the angels look like. Right. So, if you're really interested in angels, a lot of this stuff came from one of the lost gospels, the book according to the Gospel of Enoch, right, which is in the Talmud or one of the Kabbalah or sort of one of the old Hebrew, you know, the Zohar. I forget which one of them it's in. And they didn't include it in the New Testament. They did for a while, but they took it out around the Council of Nicaea in the year 525 AD, because they found that Christians, Catholics found that people were revering the angels over, you know, the saints or over people or even over God. And so there's sort of this downplaying of the angels, like because of our human tendency to revere and honor them, which quite frankly they don't want, and they don't want that or need it. They're egoless, really, actually. But putting too much sort of adoration on them separates us from them in sort of a weird, not natural way. And my friend John Weirich, who's sort of a Sufi mystic, always says that when you're a mystic, your goal should be honoring the masters, prophets, and saints, the human beings who have reached enlightenment before us, because they are the fastest way for us to get back to God. And angels and these other beings are a bit of a distraction from that. So if your goal is mysticism, you should, I hate to say ignore the angels, but there's a little bit of a funny kind of spiritual precedent around not wanting to worship the angels or as a distraction from the real deal. Okay. So here's a fun, interesting story about the Ancients of Mythology piece about the fallen angels. And again, I want you to take it as mythology. I have no idea if it's true or not. I truly actually don't. I think maybe it's sort of true, but it really feels more like a myth to me. And that's a story that a long, long time ago, the angels became jealous of our human experience. They were jealous of our favor with God as being God's sort of favored, chosen children, that we had this free will, we had these physical bodies, we had all this fun, we had this beautiful planet, you know, and they're servants, you know. So they became jealous of our human experience and fell to earth, actually dropped their frequency and manifested here. And in so doing became corrupted by the hedonism of the earthly life. So eating, drinking, sex, all of that stuff kind of corrupted their natures. They took human wives and begat a race of beings called the Nephilim. The Nephilim are human angel hybrids. The stories about the Nephilim are that they had six fingers on each hand, and they were giant. They were incredibly huge. And they had these, and there were lots of them, they had these intense appetites, and they would eat everything. They ate everything in sight. They consumed animals and plants and sort of every living thing. They would consume this. And they were set on sort of on this destruct sequence where they were going to basically destroy life on Earth. And the story is that God sent Archangel Michael with the host. The host is the heavenly army that Michael's in charge of, to kill the Nephilim, so that they wouldn't destroy humanity and the Earth and this experiment that we have here on Earth. And that didn't work. Michael and the host couldn't destroy them because they were actually more powerful than the host. So at that point, God sent the angel Gabriel to Noah and told Noah to build an ark because he was going to flood the earth. And the flood, the great flood, was what God had to do to save humanity and all of life on earth from the devouring rage of the Nephilim. That point, and that's what that happened, and the Nephilim died, and God punished the fallen angels by casting them into hell. This is the start of the race of demons. I don't know. I have no idea whether it's a true story, but I like it as a story. I think it's a great story. So you can take that as with a grain of salt, taking it into consideration about the story of the fallen angels. So a lot has been written in sort of the new age, or angels sort of had a renaissance in a way with the new age and new age metaphysics, and has a real, real, real love of the angels. And again, I invite you to take it all with a grain of salt and form your own opinions about these beings for yourself. And some of you will be super, super drawn, will be angel people and really love the angels and work with them. And if you have that, if you have angels all around you, you probably are one of those people that's works, as a human agent for the angels, which is quite a lovely thing to do. It's a beautiful thing to do. There's certainly nothing wrong with that. Some of the best people I know function that way. They are human, the human hands here of the angelic forces. I think it's very interesting. We're going to actually go visit Angel World in a few minutes, but they exist in a very complex pattern up there in Angel World when you visit it on many levels. So they're grouped together by frequency and vibration in these formations called wheels. So they sort of hang out in these circular patterns of angels called wheels. And if you read these old biblical things, they'll talk about the wheels of angels, right? And the wheels have many levels that are all interrelated. It's very complex. It reminds me of a intense sort of corporate, you know, just going to move out of the way here. Kind of a hierarchical structure, like a big corporation. That's a bit what they're like, you know. And they call these angelic world, they call the hierarchy. Okay. And just to give you a little bit of a sense of them, they're in the hierarchy. There's sort of three levels of these angels. So the first level are the angels of pure contemplation, and they govern all of creation. And they are the seraphim, which are the ones that are closest to God. The cherubim and the thrones. Like my one eye, he was one of the cherubim. And I still don't know what he was doing. He was checking me out. But they don't have very much to do with humanity. They don't have much to do with form at all. They're pure, angels of pure contemplation. Then we have under them, we have the next level, we have the angels of the cosmos, and they govern all of cosmos. And they are called the dominions, the powers, and the virtues. And they're sort of, they don't have much to do with humanity except the virtues. So the virtues are like the angel of mercy, the angel of love, the angel of, you know, these, you know, unconditional love or pure love. They have kind of a quality that they bring, they bring that vibration, they hold that vibration very strongly, and they bring it into our world. And then we have the angels of the world that govern our planet, the principalities. The principalities are angels that govern, they're sort of archangel type ones that govern large sects of land, you know. So there's sort of an angel that watches over the North America, right? Or continental kind of things. Or those vast chunks of space. Those are the principalities. Then we have the archangels, which you guys probably already know a lot about archangels. And then underneath that, you know, there's hard to know how many archangels there are. There's kind of hotly debated how many. I don't know how many there are. There's some people say 7, some people say 10, some people say 25. I don't actually know the answer to that. And then underneath the archangels are the angels themselves, which are individual and unique, and assigned sometimes assigned to individual humans. I think that often if you are an angelic type person, you will have had an angel assigned to you, at the birth of your soul, and that angel watches through your cycle of evolution and cycle of incarnation until you reach complete enlightenment and evolvement and go back to God. So that's like it's like an angel that ushers you throughout your, your whole entire cycle of life and evolution. And they're not famous angels, they're just unique to us, right? So the guardian angel, that's sort of what we think about, of our guardian or personal angel. And I don't know, somebody asked me recently, does everyone have one? I would say most people have one. Some people don't, some people do. The archangels themselves, you can call on them, you can petition them for guidance, and if you call or invoke them, they will come around. So, for example, if you need guidance or you need protection, Archangel Michael is really good at that. If you don't feel safe, you can work with him. You can invite him to be present with you and really work with him. Now, I work with two archangels on a regular basis, and that is Archangel Uriel, Azrael, who's the angel of death. And he's actually my favorite of them. Sorry, other angels, because he's the most, in my opinion and experience, the most compassionate of them. Now, and then I work often with Raphael, Archangel Raphael, who's sort of the patron archangel of healers. And he'll come around often when I'm doing healing work, or there's particular times when he comes through me. Sometimes he's there with me when I'm teaching, you know, and I can feel him around me. I know one of my psychic teachers had this theory that we all belong to sort of in a school or a house of one of the archangels, and so kind of follow along, and that they have divided humanity into, well, I'll take this group and you take that group, and that all of us belong to one group of them. I think that could be true. I don't know. So I think it probably is true that we have sort of an archangel. They're not in your business every second of the day. They're around overseeing. They're like managers, you know? And then these particular, the personal angels are more involved in our daily life. Okay. Let's see. So we're going to do a guided meditation. Oh, it's thrones. Yeah, thrones, not drones. No, drones. No, thrones. Yeah, the thrones. And I can send you this. The thrones aren't that scary. It's a funny name for them, but it's just sort of an old, designation of them. Thrones and dominions are levels of them. I don't know. you don't have to be freaked out by the thrones. They're fine. So we're going to go do our meditation in just a minute, where we go journey to the inner sanctuary, and we're going to meet, you know, a guardian angel if we've got one, and they're going to help us get up to angel world, and you can take a peek up there and see what it's like. But I want to just say my experience of working with angels as guides, that they are incredibly patient in general. I mean, they have, of course, they're all unique in their own ways, but in general, they're incredibly patient. They're generally really, really lacking in judgment, so they don't judge our faults and things like that. They do have a bit of a wobbly sense of time, in my experience. So they're immortal beings that have never incarnated or lived a human life. So if you ask them how soon, you know, well, when am I gonna meet the love of my soulmate? And they're like, soon. Soon. Think about what that means to an immortal being who's never experienced time. Soon to them could be 5 lifetimes from now, because they have no concept of time the way we experience it here. So they will often give you sort of funny information about time, because I think they just don't experience it in the same personal way that we do as we're moving through time. And the other thing that about them is that they can be, and again, I'm making a generalization here, they can be a little funny about our suffering, you know, like since they don't have bodies, they don't really have emotions the way we do, they see the overall picture of how what's going on in our world affects our evolution. So they're like, you know, oh, isn't that amazing? Like, look how much you're learning. Isn't that great? Like, that's tends to see how they feel about suffering. If you really want a spirit, a guide to hold your hand and sympathize and answer your questions about time, talk to one of the ascended masters. You know, if you want to cry on somebody's shoulder, cry on Jesus' shoulder, because he understands a broken heart and he understands time, because he lived human lifetimes, you know? And all of the master level guides, the human masters, ascended masters, have a better understanding of these, you know, what it's like to suffer and feel pain and go through time and be a human, right? At the same time, because they're not part of our human experience, they offer, or they are part of it, but they don't share it exactly with us. They offer us an incredible bird's eye view of our soul's evolution and sort of the big picture. They're really good at that. So that's something where angels are really actually super useful and beautiful. And I think that they're great, especially the regular sort of personal angels, because they have, like I said, infinite patience, and they're really dedicated to the evolvement of humanity and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, let's have you guys experience them and see how they go for you. So what I want you, we're going to do our meditation now. So I just want you to settle yourself if you can. Sit kind of upright in your chair and back a little bit upright, spine upright. Feet on the floor or cross-legged under you if you're sitting on the floor. And you're going to take a nice deep breath. And come into your body on that breath. Really bring yourself home, bring yourself in. And breathe down all the way into your hips and your pelvis. Bring yourself into your legs and your feet. Really deep breath in the top of your head. Fill your whole self with light. And exhale down the grounding cord. If you feel like you need a little bit of extra protection, then make a nice, strong barrier layer. So breathe into that outer layer of your energy field. Make it nice and strong. And now from this place of being more grounded and cleared and protected, you're going to journey to your inner sanctuary. So that place in spirit realm we've been working with now for many times in class, you're going to go there and notice where you are. So begin to wake up your psychic senses. Look all around you. Is it the same place you've always been? Is it a different place? What's on the floor? Grass, sand, leaves, floor? Look above you, look all around you, and open up your psychic senses. So what do you hear? What is there for you to hear here? What do you sense or know? What do you feel in your body or smell? And into your inner sanctuary now, you're going to invite a representative of the angels. Be your personal guardian angel. Maybe it's an archangel that works with you. Invite them in. And just notice how you perceive them. What do they look like? Do they look human? Do they look like an energy blob? Do they look like a column of light? Or what do you see or feel or sense or know about this being? How are you experiencing it? And you're going to ask it some questions, this angel. So first of all, you can ask for a name. And it may just give you you can call me Fred, name. That's okay. And you want to ask the angel, what is its function or purpose in being with you? Is it a healing angel? Is it an angel of love or a protector? What's its function? And how does it communicate with you? What is the best way for you to receive messages from this angel? Now you're going to have the angel escort you over to your elevator. And remember the last time we did this, an exercise like this, you'll have an elevator. I like the elevator analogy, but you can have some sort of conveyance. It can be a magic carpet or horsey with wings on it or some kind of conveyance that's going to bring you up. In my case, I'm going to use the elevator analogy. So you can stick with whatever's happening to you, but I'm going to talk about elevators. So you're going to step onto the elevator with your angel companion and you're going to push the button that says Angelic Heavens on it. And it's a pretty far up there button. And as you do that, the doors close and the elevator begins to move up, 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 and you can feel it lifting you through all the astral plane, the causal plane, and the human soul world, and this plane and that plane, up, 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 very high up into the cosmos. And as it goes up, you may feel lighter and lighter. Now the doors bing open and you're going to peek out the door. You may step off the elevator and walk around. You may notice if you want to do that you are greeted by another host, another ambassador. And I want you to spend just a minute or two looking around. What's it like up there? How do you experience it? What does it feel like? Is it familiar? What's it like? Is it empty? Is there tons of other angels up there? And have them tell you, your personal angel and whatever ambassador is there for you, have them tell you something important you need to know. They have a piece of information for you. Now you're going to thank your ambassador, whoever's there with you, thank and bless them, receive their blessing in return. And you're going to step back on the elevator with your guard, your guardian angel, your personal angel, and you're going to press the button that says Inner Sanctuary. And the doors close and you can begin to go down, down, down. Through all the upper realms and the upper layers, down, down. Settling back down into our dimension, coming back into your inner sanctuary. And the doors open and you come out of the elevator from your inner sanctuary. Just reestablish yourself here for a moment. Take a deep breath. Begin to bring yourself back to your body. You can thank the angel that acts as your guide and your guardian while you're there. Take a really deep breath. Exhale any extra energy down the grounding cord. If you feel dizzy or lightheaded, which sometimes can happen when you visit that high up, you're going to really ground. So really feel, reconnect the grounding cord. Deep breath in the top of your head. Dump any extra energy you have down the grounding cord into the earth. Letting it go. Wiggle your fingers and toes. Begin to bring yourself back into your body. Feel the big bones of your body supporting you. Really nice deep breaths. And when you feel ready, open your eyes. So that was our class on angels. I would love to hear about what that experience was like for you guys. And we can talk about it on the Facebook group. It's always fun to do that. So next time we're going to begin the class when we work with, you know, learn to work with guides. Doing readings for people. But I'm going to stay on the line for a few minutes and answer any questions or hear your comments about what happened with the angels because I want to hear all about it. So great class for today, and tell me about it. Bye, everybody. See you next week.